Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Congratulations on getting through your 9-to-5. Thank you so much for listening. It is The Drive. My name is Carrington Harrison. Happy to be here with you on this wonderful, wonderful Thursday. We've had a lot of fun so far. Hopefully you guys have had a very, very good day. Coming up in just a bit, you know what? The Chiefs were on the Up and Adams show earlier today. We'll go through some of that. We'll also replay, if you missed it, the CEO of Red Lobster is very happy with the support that people like myself have given, and he needs more of your support. We'll continue to get to that. We'll also hear from Jacob Milham coming up in a bit as well. He is with Kings of Kauffman, and we're talking about the Kansas City Royals. Let's start with the Kansas City Royals. This was a couple of days ago. Jack Caglione hit his first home run.
1-1 pitch. Caglione hits a drive out into the gap in right center field. That's in the alley and gone. Caglione's first home run at Kauffman Stadium. Kind of a sinking line drive. And it went out of the shadows around home plate and over the wall and brightly lit by the sun right center field. So now Caglione has homered at Kauffman Stadium, and he has a total of 3 home runs and puts the Royals up 1-0 here in the second inning.
And no doubt Jack Caglione could feel like he could fly right now.
That was the first home run, and it was good to get that first one out of the way. You know, it's been a while since Jack Caglione has hit a home run. You know, it was a couple of weeks since he hit one, period. He's never hit one at Kauffman Stadium, and you know what? He liked it so much, he decided to do it in back-to-back days.
Caglione blasts it. Deep center field. Cruises back. He looks up. It's way out of here. Jack Caglione's second home run at Kauffman Stadium is a moonshot to dead center. 466 feet. 110.8 off the bat. Whoa.
That was Jake Eisenberg, who, I mean, just a great call of a home run. I mean, it was a really, really impressive home run from Jack Caglione. I mean, he really got a hold of that one. The text line, 913-586-7965, CDOT, whoop-de-doo, the Royals swept the Pirates, sound like they're ready to win it all. I'm not saying that when it comes to the Royals, but I don't think the Royals are maybe that, as far back as we all have made it seem at times. I'm not here to make it seem like the month of June was great for the Royals. They won one home game. The Royals are 2 games under 500 and 3 games out of the wild card picture. They're not out of it. We can debate if the Royals are in it or not, or what you would like to do at the deadline. But, I mean, a 3-game set when you still have 70 games left in the season, there is no reason to give up if you are the Royals. Now, the debate is, can you trade Seth Lugo and still be going for it? I mean, we saw the Tigers do that last year. The Tigers made moves at the deadline and still made the postseason. So maybe the Royals end up being that team. I also think, to what Vern had to say a couple of days ago, and I'll play it for you if you missed it, the Royals don't need to make a decision now. The trade deadline is exactly 3 weeks away. It's July 31st. So you got time to make a decision about what you want to do. Trust me, teams are monitoring the Royals. Brian Cashman came out today and said that they're looking for starting pitching. Oh, wait, the Royals might have a starting pitcher available. So, I mean, other teams are doing their due diligence and certainly keeping an eye on the Royals. But when you're hovering around 500 and you're 3 games under 500, Just play it out for the next 10, 14 days and let's see what happens. We had Vern on the show a couple of days ago, and he said that he would trade Seth Lugo no matter what.
If I'm JJ, if I'm John Sherman, I'm praying Seth Lugo stays healthy tonight, and I'm hoping that price goes up and hoping that more teams stay in it, right? You want the Diamondbacks to stay in it so they don't make Zach Gallen available. You want the other right-handed trade options to stay on quality teams, because to me, in a market like this, even if the Royals get red hot and win every single game going into the All-Star break, you still need to trade Seth Lugo. If you're above 500, I still think you need to trade Seth Lugo, because if you're above 500, that means maybe this offense is starting to turn it around, because it's not just we're living and dying with our starting pitching. Again, it goes back to my edict to the front office. Prove to me that it's not a white flag and you can move Seth Lugo today. But until you can do that, let's take this thing to the deadline.
I still side with Vern. I don't think the Royals are going to make the playoffs, and I think it is in their best interest to trade Seth Lugo. But I also think that in this, I think that multiple things can be true. Someone just texted in, C-Dot, I remember you saying that the Royals are out of it and it's just reality. You've been inconsistent with the Royals. I don't think I've been inconsistent with the Royals. The Royals have the second worst offense in all of baseball. To me, that's not a team that can realistically make noise in the postseason. But I also think you have to look at it from the Royals' perspective as an organization. If you're two games under 500 with 3 weeks left to go until you have to make a decision, you don't have to do anything right now. So let's just see how the next couple of weeks stack up for the Royals. The big perception around the Royals as a team is that they don't beat good teams. All right, well, they got a bad team out of the way in the Pittsburgh Pirates, and now they go back to playing pretty decent teams. They got the New York Mets coming into town. You could argue that the Mets are the second best team in the National League. The Royals get a couple of days off. Let's see if they can win this series. You then got Miami. Miami's not very good. And then, I mean, leading directly up to the trade deadline, the Royals play good teams. Chicago is good. Cleveland is good. Atlanta is good. So let's see how the Royals handle it against actual playoff teams, something that they have struggled with so far. And if the Royals offense is what it's been for the first 91 games of the season, then we'll all be having the same thought. Man, the Royals are six games under 500. They're 5.5 games back of the third wild card spot. It's in your best interest to trade Seth Lugo. My biggest point right now with the Royals is you just got time to make that decision. You don't have to trade Seth Lugo on July 11th. You can trade Seth Lugo on July 28th, just depending on how the next two and a half weeks play themselves out.
I'm with Vern. I'm 100% trade Lugo no matter what. And I view it the same way that you talked about with the Tigers last year. I also think, and maybe this is just Royals fans need to kind of recalculate their brain and view it as less black and white and more in the gray. You can sell Seth Lugo and still tell me that you're going for it. Like, let's say you sell Seth Lugo to pick a team, the Red Sox, Yankees, a team that's in it, and you get a starting outfielder back and a prospect. That's the definition of going for it. Hey, you gave away a commodity that's going to expire at the end of the year, and you got a starter back that will help you in the now, and you feel like your pitching can maintain even without Seth Lugo. Now, if the Royals sell Seth Lugo for, you know, three AA players and one AAA guy, yeah, that's white flag. But there's a world where you can trade Seth Lugo for a major league ready player who can join the ball club and hit the ground running. There's a world where you can find a starting caliber, cost controlled player. I think it may have been Royals Review. I apologize if I were made one Royal way. One of those podcaster blogs had a suggestion where the Royals are part of a three team trade that they bring in a starting outfielder for the Pirates and multiple prospects from the Cubs as part of a three team hypothetical deal. Like, selling Seth Lugo to me is not a white flag. What the compensation for Seth Lugo is will determine if it's a white flag or not. But I'm sell Seth Lugo, but make a deal that sends Lugo somewhere that helps you in the now and in the later. You can do that in a trade. It's all going to come down to this. And Jacob Milham was on the show, said something similar to this. J.J. Piccolo has to win the Seth Lugo trade. It doesn't matter the how. It may be for 2026, maybe for 2027, it may be for 2025. But whenever Seth Lugo is moved, and I believe it's a whenever, not an if, J.J. Piccolo has to win that trade. And that will be the overarching way we view how this season went down, is how the compensation for Seth Lugo works. Because if JJ loses the trade, then yeah, it's a white flag and it set the roster back. But if you win the trade, you can win this season and next season and beyond because you nailed this move.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Royals right now, and the Royals have 15 games before they have to make a decision. They have three more. You then get back from the All-Star break, and they have 12 games before the Royals have to make a decision. I do think the Royals are going to take the time to determine. It's not like Seth Lugo. I mean, right now, the only thing that can hurt you is Seth Lugo gets hurt, right? That's the only thing that can hurt you. But you can take this thing up until the absolute final hour to keep making a decision on what you want to do in terms of how you want to build your roster. So I honestly will defend the Royals and give them the opportunity to kind of play this thing out and see what happens with the team. But I do think you have to be encouraged by what you've seen. The Royals are two games under 500. If they win the series against the Mets are one of the five best teams in baseball. They're going to be one game under 500 heading into the All-Star break with the opportunity to reset their rotation, reset their staff, and kind of see where they are. Let's just kind of see how the next couple of days play themselves out. All right, Rob, before we move on, you know the rules. If we talk about the Royals in the 5 o'clock hour, and we're in a good mood today on an off day, today is a good day to give yourselves a random Royals lineup. Hit me, Rob.
Baseball with the Royals. If you want to be
having a great time.
Carrington, you're in a good mood. Today's random Royals lineup takes us back to the year 2003, which, let's be honest, was one of our favorite Royal seasons of all time.
This might be my absolute favorite Royal season of all time.
Who needs a World Series when you have, what was it, Nostras Kramos or whatever? What was We Believe? It was a wonderful time to be a Royals fan in Kansas City.
I mean, winning 83 games in 2003 felt like they won the World Series.
Dayton said something very similar once. Here's today's random Royals lineup for on this date in 2003. The Royals actually got smoked by the then Anaheim Angels 7-1. Here's your lineup. Leading off in right field, Aaron Guile.
Aaron Guile, versatile. He can hit anywhere you need him in the lineup. You need a hit from power, he can do that. You need him to lead off, he can do that. You ask Aaron Guile what needs to be done, and he'll go get it done.
Batting second, the second baseman, Desi Relifer.
Another versatile hitter. The fact that he's hitting two for this team is telling me it's answering a lot of questions.
Batting third, the center fielder, Carlos Beltran.
I really love this team. This honestly might be my favorite team of all time.
Batting fourth, the left fielder, Raul Ibanez.
Yeah, hitting cleanup. Probably had a home run this day. What do you have, like 15 home runs that season? 75 RBIs? Legitimate.
Batting fifth, the first baseman, the all-star, Ken Harvey.
I was just about to ask, where's Mike Sweeney at? Mike Sweeney didn't play this day?
Must have been hurt.
Mike had the day off?
Must have. It was a Thursday day game, so it must have been a getaway day.
Ken Harvey made the all-star team? I mean, I know that he did, but just when you say it out loud, it's like, really?
He was an all-star.
No, I know that he made the all-star team, but really? Yeah, 2004, he made the All-Star team.
It wasn't this year, but he did make the All-Star team.
I mean, 2004 Ken Harvey, the Royals need to add 2004 Ken Harvey. He had 287, 13 home runs, and 55 RBIs. That's basically their entire outfield combined.
Batting six, the DH, Michael Tucker.
Big dog, big Tuck.
Batting seventh, the rookie of the year, Angel Barroa.
I don't know why he wasn't leading off. He should have been leading off for real.
Batting eighth, the catcher, Mike DeFelice.
Who?
And batting ninth, the third baseman, Julio Mateos.
Starting to see why this team fell apart in the second half of the season.
By the way, they lost this day because Chris George started.
Oh, Chris with a K.
And he gave up five over five innings, moving his ERA to 7.11 on the season.
Goodness gracious, that man was out. He was stealing money.
By the way, he had a 7.11 ERA. This wasn't like, oh, we're going to have him start a few random games. This was his 16th start of the season.
Legalized bank robbing. You want to know, the Royals were actually 48-41 on July 10th. So things were humming for the Royals that day. Absolutely humming for the Royals they were. Well, good for them, man. I'm glad to know this.
I mean, we weren't doing radio in 2003, but I do imagine every day was, got to improve the rotation. Just got to do it.
That's what I'm guessing. I'm guessing Don Fortune was going crazy about that back in the day.
I mean, just screaming, how is Chris George playing every fifth day?
Rob, is there a way for us to figure out what the attendance or why a certain thing was? I just randomly was scrolling on the 2003 Royals. On July 19th, a Saturday against Seattle, they got 39,000 people out there to watch Daryl May against Gilmesh. Can we figure out what promotion the Royals have for them to get 40,000 people out there on a Saturday in July? Because I know it was hot out there. I know it was hot.
I mean, trying to think, was that Ichiro's rookie year?
Yeah, maybe. But I mean, just looking at it, I mean, just the whole series, I mean, so it was a Thursday through Sunday. They got 22,000, 30,000 on the Friday. Then they got 40,000 on a Saturday. They had some promotion on Saturday. It was Jersey Day or something on Saturday, July 19th, back in 2003. I would just love to know what that is. All right, Rob, do the Baker read, and then we'll hear from the Chiefs.
Your workday is over.
Oh, yeah.
You're headed home, and now you're stuck in traffic. Time to get caught up on the biggest stories in Kansas City and around the country with CDOT and Rob. It's time for the hits. Number one.
Well, Kansas Hardest Hits are brought to you by Baker University, where graduates earn higher salaries and land jobs faster than any university in Kansas. Apply today at bakeru.edu.
All right, I want to play this for you. Let's start with, you know what? Let's start with Matt Nagy. He wasn't on Up and Adams, but we actually haven't played this yet. Matt Nagy was on the New Heights podcast. You guys are very familiar with that. It's one of the more popular podcasts in the world. And the Chiefs offensive coordinator was talking about their early view of Josh Simmons.
I got to ask you, offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
You drafted Josh Simmons. This kid looks incredible. Looked incredible at Ohio State. What do you think he'll bring once he's fully back and healthy?
Yeah, I really love his athleticism. You're right. I mean, his ability to really show his strength and athleticism on the edge, one-on-one, being able to recover if he gets beat. I mean, it's rare.
Dude, it was like flashes of like Jason Peters, like Trent Williams type of movement and bending and redirecting. I agree 100%. Yeah.
Agree, man. He's going to really put it together. And I think like right now, just Jace, as you know, man, just kind of understanding the calls and all the different calls you can have at the line of scrimmage, when you're going to, you know, squeeze and, you know,
tell the guard, that's what the guard's for. He's got to block the man Mountain Dean on the end. The guard could tell him, you know, hey.
That's right. That's right. So he's really, really been locked in, though. It's been great to see him, like, in meetings and out of practice. He's almost sometimes a little bit too serious because he's really locked in. It's good to see.
That was Matt Nagy. He was on the New Heights podcast talking about Josh Simmons. I mean, it makes sense. He's their first-round draft pick. They've very much been talking him up. I don't necessarily care about that as much. It sounds physically like he is ready. And there was a question about that. I think that's partly why he dropped in the draft, is people just weren't sure about the medicals, weren't sure about the health. The Chiefs took a chance. They took him at 31, I believe they got him at 31, 32. I think they traded back actually to go get Josh Simmons. And it looks like he's going to be healthy. I think that's going to be the story of training camp. I actually don't think there's a lot of stories around the Chiefs at training camp, which makes sense. They won 15 regular season games last year, and they've been to the Super Bowl the last 3 years. So I just don't think that August football practice is as important in Kansas City as it is some of the other places. But how does Josh Simmons look? Is he ready to start? Is he capable to start? Is he going to start? I think that's one of the few questions that the Chiefs have heading into St. Joe. I want to play for you guys what Xavier Worthy had to say. He was on Up and Adams with Kay Adams. He says that Pat is moving a little different this offseason.
He in a different mode right now.
is he different? Like, are they different right now from where you were last year in OTAs?
I think we're really locked in right now. Everybody's came back. This is my year two. This is Rasheed's year three. This is Hollywood's year two in the system. So I feel like a lot of guys came back more comfortable and it made things easier. We're not just kind of easy into things. We're not learning the playbook. We're not thinking. We're just going out there and playing.
That was Xavier Worthy when he was on the Up and Adams show earlier today. I like hearing this about Pat. When you lose how the Chiefs lost in the Super Bowl, it has to make you reevaluate some things. They were not close in the Super Bowl. It was never a game in the Super Bowl. When you do all of that work and you get to the very end and you get beat like that, it should change you in some ways. You should have a different mindset. So I like hearing that. We were talking about it earlier that the Chiefs, they've had a very quiet offseason. That's what I like. It has not been really much of anything coming out of Arrowhead. They had the Xavier Worthy issue off the field. Feels like that was like March, April. They had that. That never really kind of bubbled into anything. It got resolved pretty quickly. The two reached a settlement, and the Chiefs really didn't comment on it. I'm not really sure if there was much to comment on, at least from them. And outside of that, there's really not been anything. The Chiefs have just kind of been in the news a lot in the summer the last couple of years. This year, it's been very, very different. So to hear that Pat has a different mindset and it's noticeable from his teammates, I think is a really, really encouraging sign. Trey Smith was on Up and Adams as well. Just a Chiefs day over there on the FanDuel Network. Here's what he had to say about their motivation after losing to the Eagles.
Yeah, I think you need losses in life to learn from it. You need losses to create. You need adversity to create endurance, you know, it helps build character from that as well. And, you know, if you go and win, you don't have any negativity that comes in your way, you know, you get used to it, you become complacent. And I think that's the beautiful thing about a loss. It taught us how much it hurt to lose comparatively to how great it felt to win. You know, I hate losing more than winning, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. What's the lesson in last year then, that loss?
I think the lesson is finish. For me personally, just finish strong. You know, we got to that point. We battled every single game to get to the Super Bowl 3 years consecutively.
Wins.
Yeah. And, you know, we still fell short. And that's something that, you know, I have to reflect on. How could I have been better in the Super Bowl to help my team win? And, you know, all of our guys, obviously, once again, it's a bad taste in our mouth. But we just want to come back and be more effective. We want to hoist that Lombardi.
Do you feel like this was like a loss that's going to propel the next three wins? Like, is that how it feels? That's sort of how I'm looking at it. Like,
yeah.
Not that you needed the loss, but that this loss will sort of be the trajectory for the next 5 years of the Patrick Mahomes and Trey Smith era if Veach gets this thing done, which he needs to get done.
Yeah, I think it's definitely it's going to be a reminder. And once again, like that feeling we had at the end of the season and, you know, just hearing about it a lot in the offseason, and it's just like, man, it's definitely gonna fuel the fire that's already within us that we want to go get it done.
That was Trey Smith as he met with Kay Adams earlier today, talking about the motivation for the team after the Super Bowl. I think the Chiefs are in a really good spot, and it's something that Xavier Worthy talked about that we didn't really get into. We can get into it now. Is I think the Chiefs are in a really good spot because I think you could maybe argue that the most talented team that the Chiefs had was the COVID year team. Remember, they went to the Super Bowl and then they kind of basically returned everybody. COVID had happened, so the Chiefs just weren't really making a lot of moves. They were kind of keeping things in-house. And that team was really, really good and kind of ran through the rest of the league. That's kind of what I think this team could potentially be. I mean, this team is largely the same as last year as a team that won 15 games. And I know there's been a lot of conversation about regression and this, that. But, I mean, the quarterback's the same. The running back room is the same. The offensive line is different, but it's a lot of the same parts as last year. Tight end room's the same. Wide receiver room is largely the same. Defense, like, this is the solid foundation of a team that won 15 games, kind of had their way in the postseason, and went to the Super Bowl. I think there's a lot of kind of positives from that. And to Xavier Worthy's point, there's really not a lot of new things to implement. It's just improving on what you've already done. Pat's been working out with these guys now for 2 years. You have the same offensive coordinator. It's a lot of continuity with this team, and that feels very much like the COVID team and kind of that offseason. Last thing I want to play for you guys here, and we'll get back to the Royals coming up in a bit. Here's Trey Smith talking about a potential extension. He ain't really giving us much.
I leave it to the hands of my agents and, you know, obviously the front office staff of the Chiefs are elite. And, you know, at the end of the day, I just let them take care of it. I just have to focus on being the best version of myself, being the best football player and being prepared for training camp because St. Joe's is around the corner. And that's going to be we don't want to talk about that right now.
I mean, we're not that far away from the deadline. The deadline is coming up, right? It's next week that the Chiefs need to get a deal done with Trey Smith for a long-term extension, or he's going to play under the franchise tag this year. Rob, kind of going back to the talk that we had earlier, I don't know if the Chiefs' plan for their offensive line is to have their right guard on a franchise tag and their right tackle to the bench. Like, I know we can say the finances and stuff shouldn't matter. You got a lot of money potentially tied up in your right guard and your right tackle. I think it's in their best interest to kind of figure that out as we head into these next couple of days as the deadline gets closer and closer. Coming up on the other side, we'll be joined by Jacob Milham. We'll play the best of our conversation, talk a little Royals baseball. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
You're listening to The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
For the first time in a long time, I'm willing to dream that this can be a special season for the Missouri Tigers.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. 96.5 The Fan.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back into The Drive on 96.5 The Fan. Earlier today, we were joined by Jacob Milham. He is with Kings of Kauffman, and we talked about the Royals that are certainly playing some better baseball over the last couple of days and so.
I remember heading out of that series with the Dodgers. My podcast host said something to the effect of the Royals can't go into the next series with the same man as the hitting coach. And you know what? It's crazy how winning some games, it doesn't matter what sport, doesn't matter what level, winning some games will change a lot of minds out there. And I'm of the camp that especially an in-season MLB move, it usually doesn't have the immediate results or the immediate turnaround that the fans would hope would happen. Now, I don't know if it was some fire, some more heat getting underneath that seat, or if there was something in the works for a change before, you know, after all the bad results. So, listen, I don't even want to think about it, because the Royals have been doing good right now, especially after that slugfest against Pittsburgh. But that chatter is certainly quieted down.
Jacob, let's say right now that you get a good offer for Seth Lugo. It's not a great offer. It's not one of those offers that you can't refuse, but you get a solid offer for Seth Lugo. Are you pulling the trigger right now, or are you going to wait and see what the next 2 weeks potentially look like before you make that decision?
If you would ask me this before, you know, Cole Reagans lands on 60-day IL and some of the pitching things going on in Omaha, I would have said pull the trigger, you know, because it felt like about a month ago, starting pitching was a point of depth for this team, right? But, I mean, there's a reason why the Royals needed to go out, or not needed, but why the Royals went out and signed Dallas Keuchel after his tryout. You know, there's some underperformance going on in Omaha right now. There's a really big injury bug that is still lingering with the starting pitching that is not on the active roster, of course. And, you know, if you want to give this team any shot of turning things around ahead of the trade deadline, I think Seth Lugo is a big part of that. And if it's not an offer that's going to blow me away, then I would just hold on it, you know, be respectful, maybe continue the conversation, leave the other team along a little bit, you know, some of the good old tactics to keep the conversation going.
Right now, we're talking to Jacob Milham. He is with Kings of Kauffman. Just talking a little Royals baseball, as the Royals are turning things around a little bit, and they swept the series against the Pirates. They have an off day coming up today, and they'll get back to action this weekend against the New York Mets. Let's talk about Jack Caglione. He's hit two home runs in back-to-back days. What are you noticing for him that has him hitting two home runs in Kauffman Stadium?
It's all about the process. Like I said, it is... He was getting some of the worst, what I would call pitch hittability, right? He was getting some of the worst pitches that any hitter could actually barrel up and put over the fence. He was one of the worst in the league at that. And that was because he was amongst the most aggressive at the plate. And, you know, I don't feel like he has been nearly as aggressive at the plate, especially there in Kauffman Stadium. And I'm sorry, you don't put it out in center field as far as he did over three walls, nearly into the next county, without changing the process a little bit. He's always been a passionate player. He's always been one of those players that if a sliver of wood makes contact with that baseball, anything can happen. But for him to be getting such quality contact, I think that is more in the mental, in the process, and ultimately just picking his pitches better.
Right now, we're talking to Jacob Milham, just talking a little bit of Royals baseball. It has just really been encouraging. The point that Rob and I discussed yesterday when talking about Cags is once you made the decision that you were going to bring him up, to me, you were going to ride with the highs and you were going to ride with the lows. We're talking about a guy who isn't even at 125 at-bats yet. We're just at 125 plate appearances. It's clear what he needs to work on. This isn't really a guy that's going to walk at this point. This isn't really a guy that has gotten hits really outside of the home runs. I mean, he's hitting 150 right now. So I think what you're seeing is you're seeing a 22-year-old who, for all purposes, should probably still be down in the minor leagues. I get why he's here. I'm fine why he's here. But we all know if Jack Caglione was still having great success down in the minor leagues and the offense was struggling, that noise was only going to get louder and louder and louder. So the Royals kind of stuck in between a rock and a hard place of brought him up, and we see kind of where this has gone. But I don't regret for a bit them making the decision to bring Jack Caglione up. And eventually, if he's the hitter that people think that he can be, he'll just figure this thing out.
Yeah, and I think that's a great way to frame it. And just to echo something that Vern has said earlier on this season, once the Royals brought Jack Caglione up from AAA Omaha, they started that clock, right? They said, okay, now it's not the Jack era, it's still Bobby Witt Jr.'s era, but you know now the clock is ticking on how long the team has control over a guy like Jack Caglione. And they needed not only the jolt in the lineup every single day, but they needed that serious power threat once again outside of Bobby and outside of Salvi and outside of Vinny. There needed to be some depth further down that lineup. And, yeah, Jack had 2 weeks in a Storm Chasers uniform, and we saw what he did in that limited amount of work. It was obvious that while he could work on the process in Omaha, he wasn't going to get the same tests. He wasn't going to be facing the same level of talent, obviously, if he stayed in Omaha. If the Royals wanted to be super safe, I think there's a case that he should still be up in Omaha if they wanted to take that approach. I don't think that's the wrong way to go. But you're right. That noise the noise would be deafening right now. And we've seen how his bat can change the outcome of a game. And also, I just want to say this. I think it has been great that he has gotten more time with the MLB coaching staff for working in the outfield. Okay, it's easy for fans to forget that he is a natural first baseman because he has looked, in my mind, very smooth out there in right field. And he had that game changing play against the San Diego Padres. Like, players don't make those sort of plays just by sheer luck and athleticism. They make it with a lot of work and learning. And Jack was behind the eight ball when he got moved out to right field, and he has made a lot of improvements on the fly. So I think there's more value for him being here in Kansas City just outside of the box.
Jacob, the Royals got two outfielders. Do you feel like Mikel Garcia got snubbed?
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. Especially as they started announcing the replacements. Okay, how many Royals fans know who the heck Zach McKinstry is of the Detroit Tigers? Like, there are so many players that if you just go and you look at their stats, they beat out Mikel in home runs. That's about it. Junior Caminero, that's kind of how it's been. Isak Paredes, that's how it's been. It was a snub-ish when they first announced the rosters, but but that degree has only gotten worse and worse as they announce these replacements. So I don't know who Michael made mad. I don't know, but he needs to go make up with some folks. This is going to be setting the tone for if he's going to be an all-star in his MLB career.
Yeah, I kind of thought, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, I just think it's tough to get three all-stars if you're an under 500 team, especially when you got your name brand player in, so to speak. You got your young, very talented 28-year-old pitcher. I just think, like, you got to, like, really know ball to kind of know Mikel Garcia. I just always thought it was going to be really tough for him to get in as another player. And getting the two in for the Royals, you got to feel good about that, I think.
Yeah, and that's the level of the layer of context, that makes it make sense, right? Like, this is the Royals, when they first announced the rosters, they were well under 500. Now they're two games under 500. But, yeah, it's not a whole lot of casual fans outside the Royals are going to know who Mikel Garcia is. There's going to be some fantasy managers out there. There's going to be some dynasty guys who know who Mikel Garcia is. But he's not even close to a household name right now. And that is not due to his level of play. It's more so due to how he did in 2024 than right now. Is he playing on an all-star level right now? Yes. Does it determine how the rest of his season is going to go? Absolutely not. And like you said, the Royals have more than one representative heading down to Atlanta, so that has to be worth something.
That was Jacob Milham with Kings of Kauffman. He was on the show earlier. Be sure to check out the podcast page to hear the full interview. Really good stuff. Getting you some Royals baseball in. The Royals are off today, but they'll be back tomorrow as they take on the New York Mets. Keep it right here. It's The Drive on 96.5 The Fan.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison. Your home for the best food takes in KC.
Regular old American nachos. You know, I don't need jalapenos with mine. Just chips. Cheese.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. 96.5 The Fan.
We hear enough audio clips in which the people are lying that I don't have it in me to get mad at the audio clips in which people are telling the truth. So Lance Leipold, he's the head coach at the University of Kansas. I believe he will be on the show next week. That's what we're working on. Excited to talk to Lance Leipold. I saw there was a group of K-State fans. They were mad. Well, it doesn't take much to get K-State fans mad. You just got to exist, and they'll get mad about something. Trust me, it won't take much. But they were mad at Lance Leipold for saying that he feels like Missouri is a bigger rival to Kansas than K-State. Here's the KU football coach.
Well, you know, rivalry games are what makes college football so special and in of itself. And I didn't really realize when I first got to Lawrence that the Kansas-Missouri game was more of a rivalry than Kansas-Kansas State.
Yeah.
But now with the two teams in conference, you know, we've got to do a better job making that a balanced one in the in-state rivalry. But to go to Columbia this year will be special. I'm sure there's a lot of people on both sides of it. They're going to be fired up. And to see some of these rivalries get renewed is special. And again, will be a great time, and we'll be looking forward to it.
I mean, you can't be mad at Lance Leipold for saying that. Missouri is a bigger rival to Kansas than K-State. They are. And that's okay. And that's all right. You know that. They know that. We know that. I'm not going to be mad at Lance Leipold for telling us the truth. The rivalry between Kansas and Kansas State is cool. College rivalries are cool. College sports are cool. The rivalry between Missouri and Kansas is special. It's special. It's one of them ones, as the kids would say. It's Duke, North Carolina. It's Alabama, Auburn. It's Ohio State, Michigan. It's one of those rivalries. Nobody, and I mean nobody, thinks of KU and K-State in that way. You guys don't think of KU and K-State in that way. What was the last memorable football game that those two schools have played? What was the last memorable basketball game that those guys have played? That's not the way that rivalry is. It's cool. It's fun. I mean, the Wildcats win every single year in football. KU wins every year in Allen Fieldhouse, and they split the games inside Bramlage Coliseum. You know, there's been some cool moments. You know, Michael Beasley, cool moment. What was that, a couple years ago, that K-State player had that fast break windmill? I mean, you know, I'm not going to make it seem like it never has its moments. It definitely does, but come on now. Lance, you were telling the truth. I mean, yeah. I don't think KU hates K-State. I think the K-State hates Kansas, sure. I don't think the KU hates K-State. I think they hate Missouri. I know Missouri hates KU. So that's what we're talking about then. That's what we're talking about. And that's fine. That's fine.
I was on a podcast recently talking about KU, K-State. Shout out to Bosco's boys, by the way. Looking for my koozie still.
Yeah, shout out to them.
But they asked me, as a KU football fan, who would you rather beat this year, K-State to break the streak or Missouri? And I said, it's not a question. Let the streak live on. Who cares? I want to beat Missouri. I don't care if it's in Columbia. I don't care if it's in Lawrence. I don't care. I want to beat Missouri. Yeah, it'd be great to break that horrible streak as a KU fan against K-State in football. That is not my prime objective in the rivalry game in 2025 as a Kansas fan. It's beating Missouri.
Yeah, someone on the text line says, as a KU fan, I care about K-State one day each football season and 2 days each basketball season, and that's it. I hate Missouri 24/7, 365. Someone said, then when will they play football? They actually play football this year. They are playing football again. That's why Lance Leipold was talking about it. They play on September 5th. So you look at that. You maybe didn't even know that. But yes, this year they will play in football, basketball, women's basketball, baseball.
September 6th, by the way.
My bad. I thought I knew it was one of those.
The 5th is the Chiefs. The 6th is the
Chiefs. Okay, I got it. Yeah, my bad. I apologize. Yeah, I remember back when you guys told me there was no value in playing Missouri. Now you play Missouri in everything. It's great. I love it. It's phenomenal. I had a lot of fun today. I hope you guys had a lot of fun today. Take care of yourself. Enjoy your Royals off day. We'll get back to it tomorrow. Take care of yourself. It's The Drive.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.